9, please. United States versus Rafael Acea.
May it please the court. My name is Amy O'Toole and I represent Rafael Acea, the appellant defendant. On behalf of Mr. Acea, we are here today to challenge the district court's two-level enhancement for obstruction of justice, its failure to apply the safety valve provision, and finally, its failure to reduce his sentence for minor participation. I will address the two-level enhancement for obstruction of justice, and my co-counsel, Mr. Cohen, will address the remaining issues. Your Honors, enhancement for obstruction of justice is premised on perjury, requires two things: one, false testimony, and two, a willful intent to obstruct justice. We submit that the district court failed to make the appropriate findings for these requirements, and the findings of fact were based on clear error. Here, in addressing the adequacy and support of the district court findings, the preliminary finding that seems to transcend the entire record is that the district court found that Mr. Acea lied about being coerced. There's nothing in the record to support this finding, and the government fails to proffer any evidence to support the district court's finding. Mr. Acea consistently and repeatedly presented a story to the district court after trial that he was in fact coerced in September of 99 to commit the offenses.
That was inconsistent with what his lawyers testified, wasn't it?
That's correct, Justice. In fact, the lawyers did testify that they were not informed of the coercion. However, is to any evidence that he was not coerced, that they had no knowledge as to whether he was or was not coerced.
Well, I think there's an implication that can be drawn. If you're a defendant and one of the defenses is I was coerced by somebody threatened to kill me if I didn't go along, you might tell that to your lawyers, wouldn't you?
You might, but in fact, Mr. Galvin, the federal defender who the defendant had most of his conversations with because of the ability to communicate with him in Spanish, in fact, Mr. Galvin had no knowledge of the coercion. However, there is some implication, in fact, that he did tell his attorneys about a visit that occurred after he was out on bail and before trial. And it's undisputed that the federal defender received a phone call from him that he was very frightened by a visit that occurred in June or July of 2000. And in this visit, supposedly it was relatives of the co-conspirators and of Salvador Castellanos that visited his home, threatened him and his family, and threatened to kill him if he told the government, in fact, about the marijuana that they were transporting. Now, the conversation that the government relies upon, or the only testimony in the record, in the trial record, that talks about the conversation wherein Mr. Acea was threatened, the only testimony is that of a co-conspirator. The testimony is biased. The testimony was in exchange for a reduced sentence, a significantly reduced sentence. In fact, Alejandro Castellanos testified that he actually never overheard the conversation. The conversation took place between his uncle Salvador and Mr. Acea. And in this conversation, the only thing that Alejandro could say is that, in fact, he would purport to give him some money and to give him some furniture if he were to carry on with the conspiracy. But curiously, the evidence is lacking that Mr. Say actually received any money. The only testimony is again from another co-conspirator, and it's very unconclusive as to whether in fact Mr. Say ever received the money. There's no bank statements, there's actually no assets, there's no evidence that Mr. Say has lifestyle changed at all, even though he was purportedly given $125,000,
$150,000. Did he buy another store?
No, Your Honor. He owned no additional real estate. What he did is he leased another store in the midst of 1999.
He opened a new store.
I'm going to let my co-counsel take over from here.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Miles Cohen, and I will be addressing the safety valve and minimal minor participant issues. The district court committed clear error when it denied the defendant's request for a downward departure based on sentencing guideline 5C1.2, the so-called safety valve provision. It's undisputed that...
How can one get a reduction, a safety valve reduction, if you've been found to obstruct justice? Obviously, somebody who's engaged in obstruction of justice has not been completely and fully revealing about the crime, which is essential to the safety valve reduction.
Your Honor, I think that there were separate findings made in that regard. Although the record is not crystal clear from Judge Grady's, in the sentencing hearing, it appears that he has predicated the obstruction of justice enhancement on the defendant's allegations that he told his lawyers before trial that he had been coerced, not specifically that he had not been coerced. So when Mr. Ceja, in his...
I don't understand how, as a matter of logic, one could get an obstruction of justice enhancement for what you told your lawyers.
Well, Your Honor...
What you tell the court or what you tell the FBI...
See, because then he then repeated those statements in an affidavit and in his motion for a new trial. And
exactly.
And that is why...
He got the enhancement for what he told the court. And now my question is just a legal question. If you get an enhancement for an obstruction of justice, which means that you're lying about the crime, how is it possible, logically, given the statutory criteria, to get a reduction under the safety valve?
Because, Your Honor, the obstruction of justice enhancement was predicated not on anything having to do with Mr. Ceja's role in the offense. He was still able to completely and truthfully divulge any role he had in the offense, yet the court was still able to find that he obstructed justice by purportedly telling his attorneys and then putting this information in his affidavit and also testifying to it at his evidentiary hearing. But this didn't really have anything to do with whether or not he was actually coerced, which is what he told the government at his safety valve meeting.
It has to do with whether he's a criminal or a victim, right? Despite the fact that he's been convicted, he depicts himself as a victim. Unwilling to admit that he's a criminal, he's unwilling to describe his role as a criminal. This doesn't seem the safety valve norm.
Well, Your Honor, he gave all information that he truthfully had to the government at the safety valve meeting. His attorneys at trial suggested that he not testify because of an unrelated tax matter. And after he was convicted, he realized it was important to let his coercion story be known. And just because he didn't tell it earlier does not mean it was untruthful. And in fact, there's no evidence in the record that he was not coerced. Moving on to the minimal or minor participant reduction. In order to get a reduction for a minimal participant, the defendant would have to show that he was clearly amongst the least culpable. In order to get a minor participant reduction, he would have to show he was substantially less culpable than the other co-conspirators. The record indicates that he was definitely substantially less culpable than the other co-conspirators. Alejandro and Carlos Castellanos and Salvador Castellanos, the people who drove this conspiracy, originated the conspiracy, and had run the conspiracy even without the defendant's knowledge. In fact, the first shipment of marijuana that arrived in Chicago, these other co-conspirators took great lengths to make sure that the defendant did not know that the marijuana was being delivered to his store. They took it out, took it to another warehouse, unloaded it there, and then distributed it for sale. It was only when a piece of the furniture broke that the defendant became aware that the Castellanos had been smuggling marijuana into his store through the furniture. these other participants organized, ran, drove this conspiracy, and it was underway without Mr. Ceja's knowledge or participation. I see my time is up, Your Honors.
Thank you, Counsel.
May it please the Court, my name is Edmund Chang. I represent the United States. I'd like to take the safety valve and the obstruction of justice issues together because I think they both rise and fall on Judge Grady's finding that the defendant was, in fact, not coerced and that he lied to the court when he claimed to Judge Grady that he was coerced. The defendant has to show, in order to prevail here, that that was clear error. He can't do it. First, this is an out-and-out credibility determination by Judge Grady. He heard the defendant's version at the post-trial hearing that he was supposedly coerced into participating in this importation scheme. Judge Grady also heard from the co-defendants who testified at trial, Alejandro Castellanos, who described the conversation that was reported to him by his uncle that the defendant had agreed, in exchange for not calling the police after discovering the marijuana, had agreed to not call the police in exchange for $25,000 and the furniture for free. Out-and-out credibility determination, and there's no clear error committed by the district judge. There's also evidence to support the support that the defendant was not coerced. Number one, there's the repeated complaints in the covertly recorded conversation by the defendant to Alejandro Castellanos that all the furniture is going to break. He repeatedly complained that the furniture was going to break, and he used very strong language, language that you don't use on, you don't use against a conspirator whose uncle has threatened to kill you and your family. In addition, the timing itself of this revelation, the defendant never called the police during the time he was reportedly coerced, and did not reveal this coercion, reported coercion, to his defense lawyers until after he was convicted. And both of the defendant's lawyers testified at the post-trial hearing that he had maintained all along that he did not know that there was marijuana in the furniture. That's flatly inconsistent with coercion. With regard to the role in the offense, again, Judge Grady made the right finding that the defendant was not entitled to a reduction. He provided a legitimate business as the cover for the importation of the marijuana. The defendant then helped unload the furniture. He helped unpack the marijuana out of the furniture. He received $125,000 for his participation and is not entitled to the role in offense reduction. He's clearly not less culpable than the average participant. If there are no questions by the court, I'll just conclude by asking this court to affirm his sentence.
Thank you, counsel. Is there any time left? 1 minute.
Your Honor, just to point to a couple issues that the government says are inconsistent with Mr. Ceja's claims of coercion. The fact that he was complaining on the tape that the furniture was broken is not evidence of this. He was just angry because this was the furniture that he was going to have to sell on a consignment basis, and now it was ruined. The fact that he, you know, used strong language shows that he was very disappointed about the condition of the furniture, and while he used his strong language to co-conspirators whose uncle had threatened him, he had nothing really to fear at the time as long as he kept his mouth shut and as long as he was going along with the conspiracy. And just to talk a little bit about what the other co-conspirators did and how they were more culpable, Alejandro Castellanos, for example, who got a slap on the wrist for agreeing to testify against Mr. Ceja, went to Mexico, built the compartments that the marijuana was actually shipped in, then came back to the United States, unloaded the marijuana, took it to another place, gave it to the people who distributed the marijuana, and was substantially more culpable than the defendant. I see I'm out of time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Right. Court will take the cases under advisement.